If you've got your notes, y'all ready here? Okay, good. We're going to tackle the most famous chapter in the Bible, okay? It is 1 Californians chapter 13. And to do that, I want you to write three initials down at the top of that sheet. D-L-P, okay? D-L-P. And D-L-P. And I actually believe this. Every person, whether they know it or not, has what I'd call a dominant life principle, okay? In other words, and that is what they use to make the decisions they make, okay? So, in other words, if somebody said to you, by the way, your dominant life principle is your deepest core value, whatever that is, okay? So, for example, if your dominant life principle is fun, and two things are come up, one's more fun, the other is less fun, what are you going to do? The one that's more fun, because that's my dominant life principle, okay? If your dominant life principle, and sadly, a lot of Christians, that is comfort. I want a comfortable, risk-free life. If that's your dominant life principle, and if it's comfort, okay? When something comes up, one's risky and the other isn't, you're going to go for the low-risk thing every single time, because that's my dominant life principle, okay? If my dominant life principle is recognition, then I'm going to tend to do the things that get me most recognition and attention. If my dominant life principle is safety, then again, I'm going to do the things that have the least risk in them. In other words, here, whatever my dominant life principle is, that ends up being the direction I go. Does that make sense? Okay. Now, here's the problem. In the church in Corinth, just like the church in California, there were a lot of people who ended up becoming Christians, but their dominant life principle never changed. Does that make sense? Okay? In other words, they became a Christian, but my dominant life principle never changed, which means this, and I've written a beautiful thing with really classy fonts up here, okay? When Christ and culture collide, even if I'm a Christian, I may not go in Christ's direction because my dominant life principle has never changed as a result of having a relationship with Christ. That makes sense? Okay? And this kind of blows your mind. Okay? The whole subject of tithing. I know this is your vacation, so sorry. But it's interesting. A lot of Christians don't tithe. Are you aware of this? It's like shocking. How can anybody not tithe? Okay? Well, it's a down economy, all this kind of stuff. We're the wealthiest nation in the history of the world. And Christians don't tithe. It kind of blows your mind. Why don't Christians tithe? Christians don't tithe because I'm a Christian, but my dominant life principle, I live for myself first, has never changed. That make sense? Okay? And so, for example, if you study Corinthians long enough, you realize the Apostle Paul's deepest core value, dominant life principle, was I should live to honor God and impact people. In other words, you read through Corinth, I should live to honor God and impact people, okay? Which means, and I know it's going to sound simplistic till you get the implications, I should live for Christ. When Christ and culture collide, the only way to honor God is to live for Christ. Talk's cheap, okay? And I should also live to impact people by living with compassion. And so I should live for Christ and live with compassion. And does this make sense, by the way? Okay? I know it's a little heavy for an introduction, but the single best chapter on how to live a God-honoring, people-impacting life, how to live not just for Christ, but with compassion, is 1 Corinthians chapter 13. Okay, now let me give you an overview, and then we're going to unpack it, okay? 1 Corinthians 13, if you give an outline of it, the first three verses talk about the power of love, and it tells you how incredibly important it is. The next set of verses, 4 through 7, define it. They talk about the meaning of love. And verses 8 through 13 talk about the practice of love and how to live this thing out. Now, it's such a big deal. At the end of chapter 12, which is on spiritual gifts, he says this, now, eagerly desire the greater gifts, yet I will show you the most excellent way. And that's love. Okay? Verse 13, three things remain, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest is love. And then it starts chapter 14 by saying, let love be your highest aim. Okay, now we're going to start by tearing apart the first three verses. Okay, so flip the page and the power of love. And the first three verses make one massive point, and here it is. The best use of life is love. Okay? The best use of life, according to the Bible, is love. And Paul starts this chapter off with a five-statement summary of how important love is. Okay, so just jot this in. Number one, he says this, without love, all that I say is ineffective. All that I say is ineffective. He says, man, if I speak in the tongues, by the way, that's chapter 12, of men and of angels, but do not have love, I am a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. Okay, now, the church of Corinth was in Greece. Greeks were into oratory. And Paul was saying, I could speak in tongues or be a great orator, but without love, I'm a zero. And what does he compare loveless communicators to? Noisy gongs or clanging cymbals, okay? Aren't both of those things irritating? Think about it. Are there a lot of irritating Christians around there? Talk, but no love, okay? And so he says, without love, all I say is going to be ineffective. And then he goes on to say this, and all I know is incomplete. All I know is incomplete, and I love this. He says, you can have the gift of prophecy. You can fathom all mysteries and all what? Knowledge. Now, you can have deep theology, but if I do not have love, I am nothing. You can be a walking Bible encyclopedia. You got the entire Old Testament memorized. You can split theological hairs 16 different ways. You can rival Harold Camping and knowing exactly when Jesus is coming back. Okay, but without love, he says, man, I am actually nothing, okay? And the huge, this is interesting, because I want to know if you think this is true in the American church. The Corinthian church defined spiritual maturity by knowledge. That happening in the American church? Maturity is what you know, okay? And what's interesting is, Scott, throw that next slide up, okay? That's tough to see. It's interesting. Christianity is a lifestyle of love and a belief system. Christianity is primarily a relationship with Christ, but when you assemble that relationship, it is a lifestyle of love and a belief system. And there are entire denominations that have divorced these things. Okay? In other words, they're going, oh, it's all about the belief system. So come here. Here's our statement of faith. Bring your Bible. Take notes. We teach expository because we do it God's way. Okay? And then you got other people that are going, that stuff doesn't matter. Let's just love one another. Love. And let's serve the Lord. Love. And he is saying it's both. Well, you've got to put both together. Does that make sense, by the way? Now, let me go back to this chart for a second. And Scott, do you want to cue up that first video? Okay. What's interesting is this. Honoring God and impacting people, living for Christ, living with compassion. He is saying this. Christianity is a belief system and a lifestyle of love. And I think our culture is getting a little sick of bumper sticker, cross-wearing, verse-quoting Bible knowledge people that couldn't care less. Would you agree? And that's why I'm going to show you a video of a deal. I described this the other day. We started meeting with a whole bunch of people in their 20s. And when Easter came rolling around, they basically said, whoa, wait a second. Easter is traditionally a celebration of the resurrection. Okay, it's a celebration of Christ's resurrection from the dead. And we finally, for the first time, said, shouldn't not Easter be a celebration of the resurrection and an unleashing of the compassion of Christ on the community? Shouldn't it be about both? So we identified the three causes I told you about: homelessness, girls being rescued, not having a home to live in, and kids in third grade below reading levels. And are you aware the government's not going to fix anything anymore? Okay, they're not good at fixing anything in the first place, and they're certainly not going to do it on decreasing budgets. So what an opportunity for any Christians that actually decide, maybe we, I don't know, ought to have both. So we ended up shutting down on Easter. I was nervous about it. I thought, man, are people in Granite Bay with these little wimpy people drive down to Oracle Arena on Easter? Or will they whip out on us? Will they give? Will they serve? All that kind of stuff. I arrive at Oracle. Every media outlet is there. I'll talk about that in a second. Every media outlet was there. And I arrived. We had no idea what was going to happen. Okay, and let me show you what happened. Can we get all the lights shut off? We were shocked. Can you flip that? We were absolutely floored by what happened that day, and at the end of this thing, We total up the offering. People have given over $350,000 to build that house. People sign up in droves for those 30. And I told you all about that the other day. You see Louis up there? It was so cool because you know this outpouring of compassion thing. We talked to Louis's buddy, and I'd been in his house already, and I said we want to give Louis like a Christian Service Award, and his friend said, that'd be great. But he said it like, that'd be great. Like, you know, the dude's got five Olympic torches. What do you give a guy that's got five Olympic torches? You know, so, but that'd be great, you know. And I said, well, is there anything that would really make his day? And he said, yeah. He said Louis had to drop out of USC, and his lifelong regret because went to war, prisoner of war camps, all this stuff. He never went back and got a degree. And he said, if you have any connections, that would mean more to him than anything at this stage in his life. I'm on the board of Azusa Pacific University. I called the president, and as God would have it, the president's reading Unbroken, the vice president's reading Unbroken. I mean, God set this thing up. I mean, it was incredible. And he goes, that'd be incredible. So on Easter, Louis arrives. He has no clue, but all of our people know this is going to happen. The community knows it's going to happen. And when Louis's done, the last half of the sermon was me interviewing Louis on forgiveness. And then we gave an invitation for people to meet Christ. And then we said, if you prayed this morning and received Christ as your Savior and your Lord, what we want you to do is stand up right now and turn your light on and hold them up in the air. Okay? And close to 2,000 people responded to that invitation. They're holding their lights up. I mean, I'm losing on stage. And then Louis Zamperini prayed for all these new Christians. It was awesome. And the second that's done, we said, by the way, Louis, we have a surprise for you. And the president of Azusa Pacific walks out on stage, puts a cap and gown on him, and presents him not just with a degree, but with an honorary doctorate degree. And the head of, you heard of Jostin's Rings, they're like the class ring people? That guy goes to the Bayside. And that guy heard we were doing this. He made Louis a one-of-a-kind class ring for himself. Jostin says God first on it and put that on Louis. And we introduced Dr. Louis Zamperini Jr. to Arco Arena. There was not a dry eye in the place. Thunderous, 20,000 people standing ovation, blew him off the stage. He goes backstage. His buddy, what he said there, his buddy said, I have never seen Louis this emotional ever, and I've known him for 25 years. It was unbelievable, okay? And you know what was the most shocking thing about this? Some of you go, what's this got to do with 1 Corinthians 13? All I say is ineffective, and all I know is incomplete. You know what's interesting about this? When God's people and God's churches start living for Christ and living with compassion, that equals credibility. Does that make sense? That equals credibility, okay? And something the church doesn't have. And here's the shocking thing to me. Channel 3, Channel 10, Channel 13, Channel 40, KFBK Radio, all these things, they all were at ARCO. They helped us promote ARCO, and there was not one shred of anything negative about it. Why? Because we were there for three causes. Does that make sense? In other words, if you're looking at 1 Corinthians 13, okay, if I have all knowledge but do not have love, i.e. compassion, I am nothing, okay? And what happens is when the church starts believing what we believe but living what we believe, I actually think it creates credibility. People are mad at Christians, not so much because of what we believe, but because we have so much time without love. We just are known as people that don't care. Okay, I got to keep moving. There's a third one. All I say is ineffective. All I know is incomplete. Number three, all I believe is insufficient. All I believe is insufficient. If I have faith that moves mountains but don't have love, I'm nothing. Okay. Number four, all that I accomplish is insignificant. All that I accomplish is insignificant. I can give my body, if I can give all I have to the poor but don't have love, I gain nothing. And last one is this. All I sacrifice is inadequate. I give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but if I don't have love, I am nothing. Okay? Now, here's what he's saying. This is very, if you take those five verses, all I say, all I know, all I believe, all I accomplish, and all I sacrifice, doesn't matter. If you put those together, check this out. Okay? He is saying this. I can have deep theology, a powerful faith, and visible signs of commitment, but if I don't love people, it's all zero. Does that make sense? Now, some of you are going, well, Ray's just fired up about that. because it's 1 Corinthians 13, okay? So I thought, I wonder if the rest of the Bible says this. And you can read this when you get a chance, but look at the back of your outline. Look at the back of your outline, okay? Every single book in the New Testament says the same thing. Matthew, love the Lord your God. Mark, you are my son whom I love. Luke, love your enemies. That's lame, okay? How many of you are Republicans? Come on, let me see. How many of you are Republicans? You got to love Democrats. How many Democrats? You got to love Bush, okay? The Acts, God so loved the world. Acts, they're together. Romans, nothing can separate us from the love of God. 1 Corinthians, faith, hope, and? 2 Corinthians, Christ's love is what controls us. Galatians, what's the fruit of the Spirit? It's love, okay? Philippians, man, Paul says, my prayer that your love may abound more and more. Colossians, above all these virtues, put on love. It's the most important one. 1 Timothy, the goal of our Bible teaching ought to be love, not arrogance, okay? James, love your neighbor. Go down to 1 John 3, 14. We know we've passed from death to life because we now have bumper stickers, okay? No, but because we love our brothers and sisters, okay? Go down to Revelation. Hey, man, God says, this I have against you. You've lost or forsaken your first what? The entire Bible says the same thing. The greatest use of life is love. Now, by the way, what's the term in Corinthians used for love? Anybody know? Anybody know? Yeah, you know what it is? It's the Greek word. Anybody take a wild guess? Yeah, it's the Greek word agape, okay? And the problem with a lot of what goes on in Christian churches is there's a lot of what you'd call sloppy agape, okay? There's nobody in America really knows what love means. I mean, it's the same word for everything. I love my wife. I love my baby. I love my biscuits dipped in gravy. Nobody knows what love means, okay? So the question is this, what does love mean, okay? How do you put the whole thing together? How do you practice it? So what I did was I thought about it, and my kids actually helped me put this message together. We started having conversations about, like, Americans, what shapes Americans' views of love more than any other thing? The Bible? No. Hollywood. Would you agree? Hands down. If you want to stretch it to media, that's Hollywood. So then we started having conversations. Well, what does Hollywood say love is? And does that agree with what the Bible says love is? It was a fascinating conversation. It got so good. Remember that was a kitchen table? We just thought, let's throw this thing out. So, for example, and I'm going to show you some clips that back this up. Hollywood says this. Love is how you make me feel. Love is how you make me feel. Okay? And there's a lot of stuff. Well, let me put it this way. You want to flip off that light there? Can we get the lights off again? I want to check to see if you've seen this movie. So at the end of it, we'll double check this. But I'll bet almost everybody in here, can we get that right there? Is that great? Okay, name of the movie? Pretty Woman. Plot. Can we get the lights on? Plot of the movie, Julia Roberts is a hooker in Hollywood. Can I say that here at CBS? Okay. It's the lady of the evening. And here's the theme of the movie. Become a prostitute, no sweat, loves an emotion you feel, and the result of your life is going to be a multi-billionaire who looks just like Richard Gere is going to drive up in an 18-foot stretch limo, climb up to your balcony with roses, and stand there while you descend the balcony, and you will drive off happily ever after, okay? Hollywood's just selling everybody a bill. Love is this emotion you feel. A buddy of mine was a youth pastor, and remember Ridge Burns? Ridge was so concerned his kids were going to buy the garbage Hollywood selling that movie. The next week he went out and he hired a prostitute to come to his youth group on Wednesday night, I am not making this up. He interviewed her for an hour, paid her for the whole night, interviewed her for an hour. In front of his teenage kids. Matter of fact, that's actually happening right now with your high school. He interviewed her for an hour in front of his high school group on what life was really like as a prostitute. And she described being beaten up, robbed, stabbed, missing teeth from guys that had punched her, all of this kind of stuff. And he was like, Hollywood paints one picture, but real life paints a whole different picture. Okay? He's also no longer at that church. But it was interesting. Hollywood, here's the problem. When Hollywood says this, love is how you make me feel, that's actually not love. That is thinly veiled selfishness, because what's that saying is this: I will love you when you're meeting my needs, okay? But the minute you stop meeting my needs, then I will no longer love you and will move to someone else. Here's 1 Corinthians would say, no. Love is not how somebody else makes you feel. Okay, real love serves. Real love serves. Johnny, I know it sounds so unromantic, okay? Galatians, serve one another in love. Love is more than talk. It is love more than sentimental feelings. Love reveals itself in action. It's something you do. It's kind of like the boyfriend who said, oh, honey, I'll die for you. And the girlfriend says, you keep saying that, but you never do it. And here's the deal. By the way, how do you spot real love as opposed to the shallow, superficial Hollywood stuff? Real love is, it always shows itself in service, okay? Real love is not Richard Gere showing up in a limo. Real love is getting up in the middle of the night with a sick kid when you don't feel like it. That's real love. Would you not agree? Okay? Real love is being patient with your husband or wife when they're grouchy. Way too many of you just looked at each other, okay? That's real love. Real love is getting up and going to work, or getting up and looking for a job full time when you're out of one because you provide for that family and you got to keep it going. That's real love. And Hollywood seldom makes movies about that kind of stuff. Real love's going out and watching your kids play. Real love is going out and working with your kids. Real love is coming here instead of the Hilton because it's better for your kids and your family. Does that make sense? That's Hollywood. Oh, love is how you make me feel, all that kind of stuff. No, real love serves. Now, there's a second thing Hollywood says. This is my favorite. Here we go. Love is an emotion you feel. And, you know, people say stuff like that all the time. You know, matter of fact, I just don't love him anymore. The spark's not there. No. You've chosen not to love him or her anymore. Okay? Because, no, I don't love him anymore. No, love is an emotion. The problem is there's this Hollywood myth that, in my opinion, is destroying American homes, and here's the Hollywood myth. Love is an emotion that is uncontrollable. That's this. Love is an emotion. It just kind of happens to you one day. Zap! I'm in love. I'm all shook up. That's Hollywood's definition of love, okay? We even use expressions like this. I fell in love, like it's a ditch, okay? It just like zap, okay? The problem with I fell in love is that's, I can fall out of love, which means my kids, my family, my wife, my husband never has anything of stability. Hollywood says love is an emotion you feel. 1 Corinthians says this: love, real love, sustains. Real love sustains. And I'm gonna tear this next verse apart because it's critical. I actually believe the Bible's an alive deal, and when you're taught it, it comes alive in your life. And I hope this verse, of any verse you cover this week, I hope this verse you never recover from, okay? And I'll read it several times. Here we go. And there's a repeating word in here. See if you can pick it up. Love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Notice any word that keeps repeating? Always. Circle it four times. Always, 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 which means love. Love is about faithfulness, not feelings. Love is about faithfulness, not feelings, okay? And he says it always, 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 okay? In other words, if I love somebody, I will always love them because it's not about feelings, it's about faithfulness. So when I love them, that means I will be faithful to them. And if I'm a 55-year-old guy and can't attract a 25-year-old girl, I don't go that direction because love is not feelings, it's faithfulness. That makes sense? Okay? Now, we were having this conversation as a family, and my daughter, Leslie, who is an expert on all things bachelorette. Is that not true? Yes, it is. And Christy watches Bachelorette, too, but Leslie, for some reason, tapes it, retapes it, and, you know, kind of reviews it and analyzes it. And they invite, what night's it? Is it Monday night?
Yeah.
And so where will a whole bunch of people be this Monday night? In our living room watching Bachelorette. Like, guys, big football stud guys, big music guys. Big, I mean, like, they're all watching The Bachelorette. Matter of fact, I'm watching this, and this big guy named Scotty Shaw, he's like an animal. You know Scotty. He's part half ape, half guy. And Scotty, that's not on the tape, is it? Scotty and I are sitting there, and we're like, man, I think she's all wrong for him. You know, or I think he's all wrong for her. And we're looking at each other going, what are we, gay? And so we're talking about this, and Leslie goes, oh, you should show him this scene from The Bachelorette. So for the first time ever, let's turn the lights off. At Campus by the Sea, here's the recent issue of The Bachelor, and watch this guy try to weasel out of getting grilled by a sharp bachelorette. Watch this. If you were her father, what would you tell her?
Run.
You got it, baby. Run. Okay? Now, I want to go over that verse again. Okay? It always, now, there's this another set of verses, and here it is. It always, what's the next word? Protects, always, trusts, always, hopes, and always, perseveres. Those four words define love, and they're all verbs. They're all action words. Because here's the deal, and this is huge. Love is not an emotion you feel, it is a state you create. Love is not an emotion you feel, it is a state you create. Say it one more time. Love is not an emotion you feel, it is a state you create. And so the million-dollar question is this: how do I create that state of love? Oh, I've lost the feelings, okay? How do I go back and create the state of love, okay? Now, to do that, there's a couple things. Go back one page. See where it says the meaning of love? This is very interesting. 1 Corinthians gives 16 characteristics of love. 8 of them are positive, and interestingly, 8 of them are not. Okay, so check it out. Love is patient, and what's the second one? Love is kind. Okay, then it goes on to 8 negatives. Now, why are there 8 negatives here? These, just think, if you're taking notes, write down the word termites. These are 8 things that if they get into our home or our marriage, destroy it from the inside out. These are 8 toxic ways of relating to people, okay? And here they are. Love does not envy. It does not boast. Now, this seeks to bless, not impress. Love is not proud. Love does not dishonor other people. Love is not self-seeking. Here's an easy one. Love is not easily angered. Love keeps, and this is an accounting term in the Greek, love keeps no record of wrongs. You know, well, 3 years ago you did this, or you always do this. Whoa. Give them a clean slate. And I love the sexual. Love does not delight in evil. Okay. Virginia, what was you and Paul's statistic last night about Facebook? 1 in 5. So we have an 11th commandment we teach at Bayside. Okay. And here it is. Y'all ready? Thou shalt not have any Facebook friends that thou used to date. Thou shalt not have any Facebook friends that thou used to date. Okay? It's just generally a bad idea. Half of you are thrilled and half of you are mad at me. It's basically, just trust me on this. We've been around the block. The statistics are blowing up. People in pastoral ministry are saying it all the time. Okay, and what happens is that you'll go connect with a former love and you forget what a jerk they really are, which is why you broke up in the first place. Okay, and then it goes on. So it gives 8 negatives. Then it goes on to this. Love rejoices with the truth. Would you circle the word rejoices? Okay, and I love this. I can't find a teenager that wants to hang around depressing parents. I really can't, okay? And mom and dad, you might want to ask yourself this question. How much do we enjoy life? Are we enjoying life or are we enduring life, okay? Because, and by the way, it's fun to get to know a bunch of you because a lot of you have no problem in this area. Rod, but it's interesting. Just keep asking yourself the question, man, is our home a place where we're enjoying God and enjoying life? Because I've never met a teenager attracted to the Christian faith by depressing parents. Does that make sense? And I'm not saying you got to be extroverted or a joke person. What I've got to say is there's got to be fundamentally something about your life where you're enjoying God and life and people instead of enduring God, enduring life, and enduring people. Okay. And then the next one, I love this. He says, love always protects. Would you circle that word? Okay. How many of you are parents? And how many of you have daughters? Go see your hands for a second. Oh, good. I just want to talk to you guys with daughters for a second. Probably 3-4 years ago, I started realizing that my daughters were going to, we started having more and more guys like start coming over. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to have a conversation with my daughters about this. I read a great book called Interviewing Your Daughter's Date. And so I took Leslie and Chrissy out to a really nice restaurant called Paul Martin's. We have another mic back there, Gabe. Can you run it up here? And so I took them out to a restaurant called Paul Martin's. And was it your freshman year? I think it was your freshman, probably freshman year, okay? And here, come here for a second. And so I said, I took them out to a restaurant called Paul Martin's, and we started having a conversation about, hey, I'd really like to interview the guys that are going to date you, okay? And the reason for that was if a guy doesn't have enough guts to spend some time with me, then
doesn't have the guts to be with us.
That's exactly right, okay? And they went, that makes sense, and I went, cool. And then I said, what advice would you give teenage guys, if you're me, I just want to meet with them before they ask you out, what advice would you give teenage guys who are going to take girls out? And just go back and forth. What did you come up with? And did I take notes on this?
Yes, we have a napkin.
This is the napkin from the restaurant. I have kept this thing, okay, because they need to write a book on this. Maybe it can go in the bookstore here. Maybe not. And so here you go. So just, you don't have to read that or what, but what, like when you said, man, what would advice, if a teenage guy's going to take you out, what would you like me to tell him? What advice would you have for teenage guys?
I don't know. We just wrote down a bunch of small things, like don't be on your cell phone, like make the plans. Don't just like expect the girl to plan what you're going to do. Just like open the door for them. Just respectful things that people just should do. I don't know, what other things do you write down?
They had a longer list than I would have come up with, actually, okay?
Yeah, like ask questions.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Just like ask questions, keep the conversation going, and
go
I don't know.
Forward.
Yeah.
Yeah. In short, don't act like a husband. Christy, first guy that asked you out, then what did you do? Like a guy comes up, hey, I'd like to take you to something or other. What did you say?
Yeah, it was like to a dance or something. And he's like, oh, will you go with me? And I was like, well, you'll have to have lunch with my dad first.
And what did he say?
He said, okay. I'm a little nervous.
Okay. And so, Leslie, here, grab the mic back. And so, Leslie, a guy asked you out.
Yeah.
Okay? And what happened from there?
Same thing happened. I was like, sure, I'd love to go to this dance or whatever we're going to. And I was like, well, you have to ask my dad first. And he was like, okay. And so they went out to lunch. But unlike a lot of dads and unlike my brothers, he treats them really nice. He doesn't...
We got good cop, bad cop routine
in
our family.
Yeah. And so, but he just like sits him down. I mean, you can explain it if you want, but he just sits him down and kind of talks to him and gives him what, like three different rules or something.
Yep.
Can you explain what those are?
Do you remember? The first one, I went, so like, for example, this guy, Christy, that asked Christy out, comes in to see me. And so we meet, we go out and grab some lunch, you know, and I have a shotgun and baseball bat. And I said to him, I said, so, hey, I, you know, only, hey, man, chill out. This is not going to be like a heavy thing. And I said, the first thing I want to say to you is, man, you just asked my daughter out. Congratulations. Okay. You have great taste. I like you already. You got great taste. Okay. Second thing I say is, raising my daughters has been one of the single greatest gifts God's ever given me. And I look at these guys and I say, and for whatever it's been, 17, 18 years, it's been my responsibility, my God-given responsibility to protect them every day of their life. 1 Corinthians, love protects. It's been my responsibility to protect them every day of their life. And then I look at the guy and I say, remember?
Can you handle that?
I say, I'm about to give you that responsibility for one night. Can you handle it? Okay? And the guy, they always go,
yes, I think so.
Yeah, it's pretty, that's exactly it. And then I say, okay, now about the physical whole thing. What do you think happens then? Oh, you could see these guys, oh, good night, you know? And so I go, now about the physical, they start slinking down. I go, don't worry, this will be heavy. I'm a guy, I got hormones too, so don't freak out. But I go, I got two rules about this, okay? And my first rule is this, you may
touch my daughter between her shoulder blades and her neck and waist, right?
You may
on
touch
the back.
My daughter on her
on
back.
On the back.
That's on her back. The you're all red. You may touch my daughter on her back between her neck and her waist and nowhere else. Okay, and then I tell him, and if you
touch her on her knee, we're gonna have a big problem.
Can we say thank you? Thank you, girls. Love you guys. With your sister. And by the way, now I know, does this sound like a great idea, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay. You know what's been neat about that? It's been really a cool thing with these guys, too. Because like I know dads that would like, I'm going to beat up the teenage guy. Now it's my time to man up and act like a jerk. I think if they're wired like that, guys, do not do this. Okay. But it was interesting. When I've done this, like the first guy I did it with called me up about 2 weeks later and goes, hey, man, my family's having some problems. Can I come in and talk to you? I go, absolutely, okay? So I was trying to build a good connection with these guys. Okay, does that make sense? But I'm also trying to protect them because, as 1 Corinthians says, love always protects. And then check it out. It protects, trusts, hopes, and perseveres. And because love does protect, trust, hopes, and persevere, that's why love never fails. In other words, when I'm doing those things, okay, you see those four things? When always, 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 and when I'm serving, protecting, trusting, hoping, versa, that's when love never fails. Feelings fail all the time. You can wake up in the morning, zippity-doo-dah, it's a great day. Something bad happens, all the zip goes out of your doo-dah-day. Feelings are fragile, okay? This kind of love isn't, because it never fails. Now, let me go back and kind of mess with you. Here we go, okay? I want to give you five questions when you're in a good mood and would like to be in a bad mood. Five questions to ask your wife, your husband, your friends, your kids, your coworkers. If you want to know kind of, how am I doing? Okay, ask them these questions. Question number is this. Am I harsh? Am I harsh? Okay? Because love is patient and love is kind. That's the opposite of someone who's harsh. Okay? And it's when I'm annoyed, when I'm hurt, when I'm wrong, am I patient and kind, or am I harsh? harsh. Now, realize there's a few super feelers out there, okay, who anytime you disagree with them, oh, you hurt me, okay? They have, did Jesus say some difficult things to people at times? Absolutely, but if you look at the scope of his life, he could hardly be called harsh, okay? So number one, good question is, am I harsh? Okay, second is this, do I have to win all the time? Do I have to win all the time? Okay? Love does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. If you're taking notes, just jot this down. Do I always have to be right and I never want to admit I'm wrong? Okay? In other words, am I always right? It's kind of like the guy who said, man, I know I married Miss Wright. I had no idea where her first name was. Always. Am I harsh? Do I have to win? Number three is this. Am I self-centered? Am I self-centered? Love does not dishonor others. It says it's not self-seeking, okay? And it was interesting. It happened in this camp right over there in the main deck. Carol and I were speaking, and this young couple came up and said, can we talk to you? And so we said, sure. So we sat down with them, and we said, okay, well, what's up? And the guy started, and he was kind of a young macho guy, and he said, here's the problem. She won't submit. And Carol and I looked at each other and go, well, you got a pretty good idea what the problem is here. And it was interesting. I said to him, can you find, I don't know, a verse in your Bible that tells you to be responsible for your wife submitting? No. Okay? Bible says, husbands, you're supposed to die for your wives. Okay? Have you been doing that? Like, no. And it was interesting. I wrote this out because I want to get this. Because lots of people go, oh, I just throw all that stuff of the Bible away. All the stuff about husband, head of the home, you can toss all that. That was then, this is now, okay? I'm going, that's kind of not healthy either, okay? But here's the deal. And I want to read this so I get this right. Biblical headship is not an excuse to get your way. Biblical headship is an opportunity to take responsibility for maximizing those around you. Biblical headship is an opportunity to take responsibility for maximizing those people around you. Does that make sense? Okay? And self-centered people don't want to focus on that aspect of it. Okay? Number four, it gets worse, by the way. Okay? Here it is. Do I have a short fuse or a long memory? Do I have a short fuse or a long memory? And you know, nothing will destroy a home quicker than this one. Love is not easily angered, and it keeps no record of wrongs. Have you ever wondered why some people wonder why life is so unfair and miserable, and it's never dawned on them that they're unfair and miserable people. It just never dawned on them, okay? And it's always somebody else's fault. And see this one? Love is not easily angered. I don't like that verse because I'm easily angered. Do you agree? Yeah. Yeah, they're too nice. I lose my cool like that, okay? Now, my excuse for years was, well, I blow up. How many of you are wired like this? You just kind of quick trigger. Oh, come on, there's got to be somebody else in there. Okay, God bless you and you and you, you and you. And so I lose my cool fast. And then my excuse, though, is that I lose my cool fast, but then it's over. Okay, well, so is a nuclear bomb. Wham! You know, so Carol and I are newlyweds, and, you know, we bought our first house, and it was a sort of a brand new home, kind of a thousand square feet. I mean, and it had a living room with sliding glass door, but no drapes came with this house. Whatever a carpenter is, I'm the opposite of that, man. I'm going, which end of the hammer do you hold? Okay, Carol married a guy with no skills. Okay. But I'm a newlywed husband, so I'm trying to like pretend I have some, okay? And so we're sitting at home one night, and it's probably Thursday, Friday night or something. We're like, it's about 6 o'clock, so we said, hey, we should go buy some drapes and put some drapes up tonight, okay? Like let's put drapes on the sliding glass door. And I said, cool, okay. So we go to a fancy drapery place, J.C. Penney's, and we buy drapes, okay? And we get home, and now the moment of truth, man. So I got to the garage, and I had one. I get my carpentry belt. I buckle that sucker on, hammers in, come strutting in. I'll handle this, ma'am. And so I go, and I go, okay, get the rod out. Okay, well, instructions. Do I read those? No, those are for wimps. So we get the rod out. We're working together on this. Now it's probably 8 o'clock. And we get the rod up, and I drill holes. Okay, got that thing positioned. Good, drill holes, got that thing positioned. I am so impressed with that. I think my wife's probably going, hey, man, I'm married to a stud. This guy's awesome. Look at he can do this stuff, okay? And then, so we get the rod up. The rod's working. This is great. And then we hang the drapes to the rod, and the drapes are about 6 inches above the floor. Because I didn't measure the drapes before putting the rod up, okay? So now I'm embarrassed and kind of losing my cool. So I go, okay, let's get the thing down. So we get the drapes. I get the... And so at this point, I'm like stage 4 of frustration, okay? So we get it down, okay? And then I measure the drapes, then we measure again, and we put the rod up again. This takes another hour, okay? And I'm losing my cool more by the time, okay? So we get it up, and we finally, I hang the drapes up, and I'm going, oh, good. Now I got holes out here, holes out there that I'm at to patch, however that happens, okay? And paint, however that happens, okay? And so, but we hang up the drapes and we go, this is awesome. Look at that, they're right on the ground. This is perfect. Go over, pull the drapes, they close a foot apart. Because I didn't measure how wide they were. And so I now have got these things too far out. So now, actually, we had holes above it. So I lower these things. We measure the, and now I'm losing my cool. I'm the hammer. I throw the thing. I can't believe it. This kind of stuff. And this is like midnight and something. And Carol goes, I think I'm going to go to bed, which is Greek for I'm going to get away from this jerk. Okay. So she goes to bed and she's laying in bed and I'm out of time. She's laying in bed and I get the drapes back up, and I finally put them up the right thing out now and the right thing down. Blah, blah, blah. I hang up the drapes. Good. They're right. They close, all this kind of stuff. I stand back, and I look at it. There are more holes on the wall surrounding this, above, below, aside, you know. So I go. So now it's like 12:30 at night. I just take my carpentry belt, throw it down. I'm going to bed, man. So I go to bed, and I pass my study on the way to the bedroom, and I think, I should go in my study and read the Bible. This would be good for me. So instead of going to bed, I go and I read my Bible. And so I finally have a little bit of time to chill out. And so I'm reading my Bible. And God says to me, you know, Ray, this could have been a real special evening. This could have been like a memory. Well, it is a memory. This could have been like a good memory, okay? You know, and I felt like God was saying, here you are. You're in your first home with your first wife, putting up your first, I'm kidding. Putting up your first set of drapes, and you're working together for the first time on this, and this could have been like a really cool couple thing, and it could have been really fun, and it wasn't because Ray, you were such an uptight jerk. So I prayed for forgiveness and kind of got it back with God. And then I went to bed, and we woke up the next morning, and I said, hey, honey, man, I really acted like a child last night. Will you forgive me? Yeah, she agreed, then did, and. And you know what's interesting? I kind of walked out of there going, you know, a short fuse or a long memory are both really toxic things to a home. Would you agree? Would you not agree? And I think if you talk to my kids, they're like, ooh, it's very nice. Like, our dad's cool, all this kind of stuff, nice to our friends, all that kind of. But if you said, what would you like to see your dad change about? This would be my question to them. Do I have a short fuse, okay? Which is why I'm telling you to ask these questions, but I'm not going to. I'm kidding. And number 5 is this. And would you star this last one? This is huge among Christians that have been in the church for more than a decade. Here it is. Am I cynical? Am I cynical? And cynicism is cancer of the spirit. And I know more pastors. We got a lot of former pastors at Bayside. This is what they all have in common. More church people. How many of you have been on a church board? Okay. Yeah, there are more cynical people, and it's tragic because notice these verses. Love does not delight in evil, but what's the next word? Rejoices with the truth. It always protects, trusts, et cetera, et cetera. You know, and I tell you what, I don't know about you. I as a latter stages of my life, I want to still like God. I want to still like Christians. I want to still love the church. I want to still love people. I want to still love my kids. I want to still love life. Does that make sense? But cynical people don't have that happen. So I just kind of challenge on this one. Take these 5 questions, and when you're in a good mood and would like all of that to change, ask them, okay? And I'll wrap it up with this because we got to get to lunch. Hollywood says a third thing about love. Love is how you make me feel. It's an emotion feel. And love is a sensation you feel. It's kind of like zap. And the Bible would say this. No, real life is not a sensation. Real life is sacrifice. Real life is sacrifice. I'm sorry, real love is sacrifice. And Mark 10:45 may be the best. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The greatest act in history, Scripture says, is Jesus Christ laying down his life for us, which means this. This is a big deal. The greatest act of love is when you do something to put the needs and interests of other people first when you don't want to. Did Jesus want to go to the cross? No. 3 times in Gethsemane, he went to God and said, hey, is there any way out of this? I don't want to do this. Okay? Real love is when you do something to put somebody else's needs and interests first when you don't want to. In other words, even though you could live for yourself, you don't do it. Even though you could lash out and get even, you don't do it. Okay? Even though you could attract a younger woman or a younger guy, you don't do it. Even though you could keep all your money and spend it on yourself, you don't do it. Okay? In other words, he basically says this, man, real love serves, real love sustains, and real love sacrifices. And I actually believe this. If you folks did nothing but take 1 Corinthians 13, memorize it, put it to practice, and live this way, our homes would be transformed, and we'd arrive next year look in a whole different shape. Okay? Let's pray together.